Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, your source of accessible technology, interviews, news, reviews, and your thoughts, letters, emails, comments, questions. It's the community's technology programme where we come together to learn from one another about what's working and not working for us in the world of technology. I'm Dave Williams, brilliant to be with you. And if you would like to contribute to the programme, you can send us an email or a voice note to Tech Talk, that's T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. That's Tech Talk at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing a special report from Site Village Wales that took place in Cardiff recently. And we'll also be learning about the Sound Without Sight event taking place at Google next month for audio creators. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-host this week, Callum Stoneman. How are you, sir?
Very good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, smashing. What's getting a thumbs up or a thumbs down for you in the land of technology?
Well, it's a thumbs up for me this week, you'll be glad to know. I just updated my iPhone recently to the latest iOS 16. I think it's 16.4.1 something at the time of recording this. And there's a new feature for the microphones while you're on a phone call. This has been around for a while in FaceTime audio, but I don't really use it that much. But now it's available in regular phone calls as well. So if you're on a call, you have to do this while you're on a call. Just pull up the control center, and at the very top, there's a new section called mic mode. And you've got a couple of options there. You've got standard, which is just the default. And then you've got voice isolation, which apparently causes the microphones to kind of focus in on your voice and get rid of all the background noise. Or you've got wide spectrum, which is like the opposite. So I guess if you're in like a conference room or something and there's a big group of you and someone else is ringing in remotely, you can have the microphone optimized for that. Obviously, the downside of calls is that you can't hear yourself. But I've tried out the voice isolation thing briefly. And apparently, according to the person on the other end, it does make quite a big difference. I don't really know how that works, but it's a nice little feature. It'd be nice to see that in more apps, I think.
It is incredible now what you can do with audio built into your device without having to lug a load of gear around. I use an app called Backpack Studio sometimes, and that lets me choose which mic I use. I can turn off Apple's audio processing in recording so I can get a nice clean recording. You can do a tremendous amount with just the sort of built-in tools very often.
Yeah, you can. And this is the thing. I'm not sure this voice isolation, as far as I know, it only works on FaceTime audio or phone calls at the minute. I'm not sure about third-party apps. It does say it's, you know, available on some third-party apps. I tried it on a WhatsApp call, for example, and it just kind of said voice isolation and wide spectrum are not available. So I'm hoping this can be rolled out to more third party. I mean, as you said, Backpack Studio or something like Just Press Record, you know, be able to change those settings. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah, or even just the Voice Memos app that's built in. I sometimes use that on my watch. You know, if I just want to make a little audio recording of something, I've got Voice Memos on the watch. So it's like having a dictaphone on my wrist. You know, if I just want to, I don't know, maybe record a tiny bit of music or speaking or something like that. Were you one of these people, Callum? Because I know a lot of blind people like to just record stuff. So almost like the audio equivalent of photographs. You know, when you're on holiday or anything like that, do you capture audio?
No, I tend not to, you know. I think, I don't really know why. I think it's just because I've always got someone with me and they're just taking photos. So I just, obviously, I don't really benefit from them, but I don't know. I've never really got into the whole recording audio just to capture. I mean, you sort of get that anyway if you're videoing something. If we're videoing something, I'll make sure that the audio is recorded as well. But I never really did that. I do use, as you said, the Voice Memos app on the watch, though. I use that all the time, you know, just for taking a, you know, if you need to just quickly get a phone number or something. I've got a little complication on the watch face for it. So you can just click it and
I've got recordings of holidays we've been on, not the whole holiday, clearly, but you know, my like bits of my son talking when he was younger and stuff like that. And I really treasure those recordings because they kind of capture, you know, a moment in time that obviously we've not been able to see a photograph very easily. You know, just brings those memories back.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is the blind equivalent of photos, I guess, isn't it?
Let us know. Are you somebody who records? What do you use to record? What equipment? Have you got a favourite app or device? Get in touch. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Stick around, Callum. It's another Tech Talk.
The Sight Village exhibitions are a great way for blind and partially sighted people to get their hands on some of the latest developments in assistive technology and try them out. The Sight Village Wales Conference returned to Cardiff recently, where Howell Davies spoke to some of the organisers about the event.
So my name is Paul Hopkins, and I work at Queen Alexandra College for a social enterprise called All Formats, which produces braille, large print and audio information. But part of my role, I'm also involved in sales and advocacy for that. And so I find myself at places like Sight Village promoting us and QAC, really, and the work that we do, and obviously networking with you lovely people at Sight Village itself when you turn up to exhibit with us.
And it's fantastic that we're back here in Cardiff. Welcome back to Cardiff.
Thank you.
What does it mean to be back in sort of face-to-face exhibits and back in the Welsh capital as well?
Okay, so I have not been Sight Village Wales before, although I've been involved with Sight Village in one way or another quite a lot. I love Wales, I'm going to say that without any prompting. I used to come here a lot on holidays, the usual thing, especially being a Brummie, like Birmingham people love Wales, so that's where my heart already is. But for us as Sight Village and coming back here again to Cardiff is obviously fantastic. We have a lovely venue, hard to describe for those that are not seeing it or experiencing it apart from the sound, but it's a lovely venue on one level. Everything is neat and where you want it to be. It's just a really lovely venue, and Cardiff has a nice feel to it, don't you think? I mean, you know more about Cardiff than I do, but just coming here last night, I just feel like it's a really, really lovely place to be. Nice atmosphere, and lovely people. And I've got my guide dog here, so we get lots of attention as ever. But certainly the Welsh seem to love us, which we love them back, so it's good.
We've got an awful lot of exhibitors here today. Is there anything that you're particularly excited about that's being demonstrated today?
So there's 32 exhibitors, I think. So there's, like you said, and you can hear behind us and around us a good hubbub. Me, I always like the, just looking behind us, people like Computer Room Services. They have a lot of different gadgets and things that are going on, a lot of affordable stuff. For me, I think it's probably emerging technologies that are going to be interesting, but I'm quite the way across stuff in general, so I always like the scanners and the CCTVs because I have some useful vision, so a lot of what's here is useful to me. But of course I'm using all the usual stuff like the Amazon Echoes and all the rest of it like everyone else, so there's nothing particular for me, but a bit of everything, I would say, because I have some useful vision but registered blind, so I'm living on that edge, really, of lots of things come into my interest zone, really.
And of course, we're only part of the way through the year. We've got more Sight Village events to come.
Yeah.
What else are you looking forward to through the rest of the year?
I think just meeting people, connecting with people. The unofficial, or my unofficial strap line for Sight Village is see you at Sight Village, because so many of us come to connect with each other as well as see what the new things are and all that. We literally come down to meet each other and you know, make even new connections, and so I'm looking forward to doing more of that. I don't have a specific event that I love less than another event, you know. I just think that with Sight Village there's something for everybody. You're always going to make a friend or a connection or two. You're going to meet some old acquaintances that you've not seen for a while. You're going to get, you know, an idea of what's hot on the in the VI world, whether that be products or services or innovations. And you should come along, and we hope to see you at our site village nearish to you, because that's the idea of having them all around the country, is that we get them as near to groups of people as possible, really. So you've got Site Village Central coming up, and then Site Village Southeast, which is in London, and then Site Village Southwest, which will be in Exeter. So they're all to play for. If you want any more information, it's www.qac.ac.uk/sitevillage, or www.qacsitevillage.org.
Thank you very much. I hope you enjoy the rest of the day and the rest of your time here at Site Village in Cardiff.
Thank you for having me on your show today. Really appreciate it.
And we'll be hearing more from Site Village Wales a little bit later on.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Clearly, blind and partially sighted people have succeeded incredibly in the worlds of audio production and music, but it's not always an industry that's easy to get into. Joining us now are a couple of gentlemen hoping to do something about that, and also to share a bit about an exciting event taking place with Google in early May. Welcome, Pete Brosher and Jay Pocknell. I hope I've got those names correct. I'd like to get yourselves to introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about your background. What do you do? What's your relationship with audio and music? Pete, let's come to you first.
I'm Peter. I am a sound engineer and audio producer and occasional musician. I play flute and keyboards for arrangement purposes. And I play with a World Music Orchestra as well.
Hello, my name's Jay Pocknell. So I wear several hats in the world of music, really. A lot of my background has been as a recording engineer and mix engineer. That's where I've done the bulk of my music work, but I'm also a guitarist and I work at RNIB these days, part-time as music support officer.
We've got a lot to cover. Let's start with the Sound Without Sight project. So Jay, this is your baby. What is Sound Without Sight?
So Sound Without Sight, it's a new project that came out of my own experience as a partially sighted recording engineer, really. I think what it is at its core is a platform for the community of blind and partially sighted musicians and audio engineers and anyone connected to that world to communicate and collaborate. And so it's an online community hub where blind and partially sighted musicians and audio engineers can access all of the latest information around technology and how to access the industry more widely. And beyond that, people can create an account and contribute anything that they found useful as well. I think it's going to be a really, really important platform that will allow people to share solutions that they found as part of their own practice as a musician or an audio engineer. I'm really excited for it to be driven and shaped by the community, but also having strong links to the music industry itself. And hopefully we can use this platform to influence inclusive design in the future. So all of these solutions and things that come up can be embedded as standard in design, so that the barriers are no longer there for someone who's just starting out.
Pete Bosher, as a blind sound engineer, you're somebody who's been advocating in this area for quite a long time. Why is SWS needed, do you think?
Well, I've always wanted to be a sound engineer, and it's taken me a long time to do that as a career. When I say a long time, I learned sound engineering in the days of cutting up tapes with razor blades, and I had to use blue tack to mark the edit points, so we're really talking about a long time ago. And then gradually it became digital and PCs came along and so on and so on. About 10 years ago, I've gone back to college, because originally I first wrote to the BBC when I was 8 and asked how I could get into sound engineering and radio, and they said you wouldn't be able to see the red light, so forget it. And I then, as I say, I kind of gradually stuck at it and ended up doing freelance work in various situations, music, radio and so on. But having gone back to college, and I studied the same course as Jay, music and sound recording at Surrey University, it's called the Tonmeister course, and having done that, I was still not getting full-time regular work, still working freelance, and I thought, there's something wrong here. It should be an ideal field for blind and partially sighted people to work in. Obviously, it's a bit of a myth that we're all great at music and so on, but nevertheless, we do focus on hearing a lot. So there is some truth in it, and it should be a really good career path, field of employment, but it's simply not happening. And so why is that? Why is it not happening? You said at the beginning, Dave, that a lot of people are succeeding. That's true, but they're succeeding in a similar way to what I was doing. In other words, they're mostly working on their own, mostly freelance or project studios, but there are not blind people fully employed by studios or by radio. There are very few anyway, hardly any. You could count them probably on one hand. Why is that? And there's a danger when we ask that question, why is that? It's a danger of talking too much about what the problems are. And Sound Without Sight, we're very focused on solutions and saying these things are possible, but you have to recognise the barriers, because why have we had to do this at all? Yeah, that was your question. And the reason is that there really are a lot of problems. Some of them are about accessibility. So if you go into a mainstream studio, you just can't go in there and sit down at the desk like a sighted engineer would do and use the equipment. You just can't. You have to find a lot of workarounds. Some of the desks that are used, the mixing desks, have visual interfaces, so they're screen driven. There's no simple way. And I mentioned BluTac before. I've even had to stick bits of BluTac on screens to be able to use them to some extent. There's all the different outboard equipment with visual displays. There's the software, which some of which is usable, some isn't. We can talk maybe more about that later on. But there are huge problems with that. That's engineering. Now, if we're talking about the music side, if you're a performing musician, you can't just pick up a score like a sighted musician would. You have to go through hoops to get the score available to you. So you have to get it either transcribed into Braille or use some kind of software to access it. Then knowing about all those problems, you have to add to that the fact that people who might employ blind and partially sighted people maybe see all these problems. And then in addition to that, you've got the attitudes that people do have towards employing a blind person anyway, which all adds up, meaning that it really is extremely difficult to get into. And that's why Sound Without Sight's needed. I think, as I said before, we're focused on finding solutions and also getting the solutions out there so that people can find them. I'd like, if I may, I'd like to read a quote from Andre Louis, who is a blind keyboard player, and he trains Logic as well. Andre said, "I would love to see something put in place to allow people that don't know they need to know they need to know. They think they can't do it because nobody's told them any different. I want everybody to have the choice."
Jay, this isn't the first attempt to build some sort of network or resource to support blind or partially sighted people seeking employment in the audio and music industries. What for you makes Sound Without Sight different from other such initiatives?
I think it's the steering group and the network that we have behind the project that means that we've got so much experience in this world. So I guess, you know, we're trying to cover, you know, people that don't have any sight at all through to people who are partially sighted on the, you know, they still have some sight, and it's a different set of access requirements there. I think previously maybe projects have been a little bit too focused in one area or the other, and perhaps not so good at documenting their work and making sure it's discoverable. So I'm really proud of how this project developed quite naturally. So originally it was based on my own experience of working in studios, you know, doing my dream job, but there being certain barriers that maybe I wasn't expecting. And I kind of just reached out from there, really, to my network of contacts and then, you know, beyond, to get a picture of what would be the most useful thing, what could solve these problems, and develop the project from there. It's very much based on practical experience from the community and responding to a set of what seemed like common barriers. So that's the starting point, and I'm just really excited to build it from there. And I think I'm keen to emphasise again how much it's going to be driven by the community. It's not just Peter and I working in isolation, creating content that we think people should have access to. You know, I'm quite happy to admit that I don't know every single thing about every site condition and every aspect of music. But when you can create a platform that the whole community can come together and contribute to and have some good ways of promoting that, I think it really kind of sets it up for success.
And Pete, what impact do you think Sound Without Sight will have?
I think once it's up and running, it will give all sorts of people, because when I say all sorts of people, I'm talking about, obviously, first and foremost, blind and partially sighted musicians and people who want to work in audio, and that's at any level. So we're not just talking about professional audio engineers, but we're talking about people who want to maybe make a podcast, maybe record for their own pleasure. It's really anyone who wants to, because we've been talking so far more at a kind of employment careers level, but it's not only that. Apart from anything else, people might want to start dabbling, trying things out, and then go on to make it a career. So it's very wide ranging, and so the people, those are the first set of people. Anyone who wants to, who is visually impaired and wants to work or wants to do something in the domain of music or audio, but then also we want to reach educators. So people in universities running courses like the course we mentioned, running teaching in schools, because I've done training, for example, on music software, both for scoring and for editing, for audio editing in schools. And generally, the people supporting the blind children in schools just don't know where to look. They don't know where to start when they're trying to support someone who's doing music O-level or music GCSE, I should say, that shows my age, or music A-level. They just don't know where to start. And obviously, the Music Advisory Service is now providing some of that. And I think it's fantastic that Jay has a foot in both camps, if you like, that he's able to be part of the Music Advisory Service, which is a great network, and then use the common goals and the common working between the two. So it's really win-win.
And I think that there's something else there about supporting people to support people, creating that kind of hub where people can go to, not necessarily just blind and partially sighted people themselves, but also people who are creating technology. So music or audio hardware and software designers, it will also be a place where they can involve and collaborate with the community. They can access people's direct experience and feedback, and hopefully, you know, bring together some kind of standard on inclusive design. You know, how it is that software should interact with screen readers, for example, or how pieces of music software should appear to be more visually accessible. So it's all things like that as well. So using all of this knowledge as a blueprint for how we can move forward with inclusive design as standard in the future.
You're both obviously coming from a lived experience perspective, and you've both worked successfully in these industries. Who else is behind Sound Without Sight?
About 10 years ago, I first brought together a group of blind and partially sighted musicians, and we had then support from Drake Music, which is a cross-disability music organisation, and also Queen Mary. And we had a pilot project, and then what came out of that was the Vibe Network. So the Vibe was the working title at that time, and that network still exists as an email group. So there is an active email group still going called Vibe, which is a sort of embryonic partial version of what we were trying to do. But then when COVID hit, I was, as so many people were, just sort of disoriented and thinking, what on earth do we do now? And that's when I contacted a number of people in different areas, some ex-RNIB. Steve Tyler, I want to mention by name, because Steve Tyler works at Leonard Cheshire, and he was very supportive in bringing that group together. People from DAISY, people from the music industry, so for example, Steinberg, a guy from Steinberg. Also, as I mentioned, Queen Mary University of London, their digital centre, the Amber Trust, Adam Ockleford have all been very supportive. So those are some of the people behind the group. And what happened during the pandemic was that we were able to arrange a series of Zooms. So again, I think this must have happened in quite a number of settings. The pandemic, which made getting together in person so much more difficult, actually made it easier to get the group together. And over the year of the pandemic, that group defined what we thought needed to be done. At that time, it was called Music and Sound with Accessibility, which is kind of what it says on the tin, but not very catchy. And we got to a point where we thought we absolutely need somebody to be doing this work day to day, a project manager. And I think God walked in the room, as Quincy Jones said, and put Jay and me in touch. Jay had already been developing the Sound Without Sight project. As you said, it's his baby. And it was a perfect match. It really was a match made in heaven, because the steering group is still meeting regularly. It's supporting Jay in what he does. And I would like to mention TAVIP at this point. TAVIP is the Technology Association of Visually Impaired People. And we very much support the Sound Without Sight initiative, and we've helped with just the admin and the arranging the funding, and also the Elizabeth Eaglebot Fund from RNIB. So they gave some seed funding for this, and all of that has come together in a really encouraging way, I think.
Wow, so quite a cross-sector collaboration and a movement. And now we hear that that Google are going to be hosting an event on the 4th of May. Jay, tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'm really, really excited about that. And this is something that's come about with both my RNIB and Sound Without Sight hats on. So in collaboration with Google and Creative United, we've been curating a hybrid event that's going to be streamed from Google's new Accessibility Discovery Centre in their London office. So what it's going to be is an event called Inclusive Design in Harmony. And it's a music industry and kind of audio roundtable event aimed at kind of paving the next steps towards, you know, improving inclusion and accessibility within music, and looking at ways that, using technology, how can we kind of create more pathways for people with additional access requirements. So it's not exclusively around sight loss. It's a slightly wider remit than that, which I'm really excited about as well. And what we're doing is pulling together the best minds from kind of music technology, equipment design, also other representatives from the music industry. And I think the most important part is also bringing musicians into the conversation as well, to be part of that roundtable, to kind of assess where we're at the moment in terms of accessibility and inclusion in the music industry, whether the strategies that are being used at the moment are working, and what needs to change and what can change. And I'm really, really hoping that we'll be able to come up with some kind of plan to encourage a bit more collaboration between designers within the industry, because you kind of have different music technology companies at the moment doing their own thing, but they're not really being like a standard approach. I think that's fair to say. I mean, there are some that do it really, really well. For example, Avid, they actually have two members of staff that I'm aware of in kind of leadership positions who have some degree of sight loss. Which I think has really helped bring on their apps and programs to be more accessible. So this event is all around, you know, how can we use that experience and replicate that across the industry a little bit more, and create some kind of design standards that will enable more accessible ways into music technology.
And is there an agenda? Have you got that far?
There is an agenda, yes. Yeah. So we've chosen to basically use the afternoon and split it into three sections. So the first part is looking at creating music. How enabled do people feel using music technology software? So that might be digital audio workstations or, you know, audio editors and things like that. What can be done there next? What are the current strategies? The second session is all around being a performing musician, so accessing performance itself and notation. As Pete spoke about earlier, there are, you know, significant barriers there still, but also a lot of work happening. So it's making sure that we make the most of momentum in that area. And the third session is all around accessing the industry itself. How can we create those pathways so that once people feel confident making music and performing it, that they can actually develop themselves as an artist?
Any performance elements as part of the day? I mean, I see that it's the 4th of May. Surely you should be playing like a, you know, a bit of a John Williams medley or something.
I'm afraid there's not actually time this time around for performance, but I'm hoping that this event will be the start of, you know, a series in around this topic. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
So, Jay, who do you expect to attend an event like this? Who's the audience?
Well, I think it's really important that you need people from different backgrounds, you know, different stakeholder backgrounds to be part of it. So there is that really key aspect that the musicians need to be there speaking for themselves, like it's not companies speaking on behalf of what they think musicians need. So yeah, musicians with differing access requirements, representatives from different technology companies, so really happy that companies like Avid are going to be there. Ableton have confirmed, which is really good, because I think they've been doing some really exciting work in this area. And also the company behind Juice, which is the main audio software kind of middleware, they call it, so the software that people use to make music and audio software. And I'm really, really excited to hear more about the developments they've made kind of under the hood to kind of make accessibility a lot more accessible. And then on top of that, you know, key people from the third sector. So obviously RNIB, Sound Without Sight, are going to be represented there with a number of other organisations from across the kind of arts sector. And beyond that, yeah, music industry representatives as well. So the Arts Council, for example, Musicians Union, and people from retail as well. Because I really want to get a better idea of what can be done to allow people to understand whether products have been designed inclusively or not, because that's a really common barrier at the moment.
What's in it for Google? Why are they hosting this?
So firstly, I'm just really happy that Christopher Patno at Google, who manages that space at their London office, could really see the value in the project. And I think, you know, Google share the view that hopefully this will be the launch pad for other exciting ideas and projects that will mean that in the future more people have access to music. So at its core, I think that's what's in it for Google, is supporting that. I think they also would like to keep one ear on any technological or digital solutions that come out of this conversation that they might be able to support with or incorporate into their products. And I think the ethos behind Sound Without Sight really matches the mission behind Google's Accessibility Discovery Center. They've just built this new space and are really keen to get people in there and create that collaborative platform. I think it all came about kind of right place, right time, in that RNIB helped contribute to the design of that space. And Christopher, who looks after that space, and I just kind of got chatting through that. And it turns out Christopher was a musician earlier in his career. And we just got chatting about how it would be really, really good to hear more conversation around, you know, music and how people can access it. And yeah, it just grew from there.
Now, if you're listening to this at home, you might be wondering what you can do to help tackle some of the barriers faced by blind and partially sighted people looking to work in the fields of audio and music. Pete, what should we do?
I think the first thing is spread the word, because this is what we need is to build a network. So tell everyone you know who might be interested about what Sound Without Sight is. Go to the website as a starting point. Then I suppose advocating wherever possible. So if you're already involved in this field, and you may be in touch with people in the music industry. You may have contacted a developer or something like that. You can mention to them Sound Without Sight. So it's still about spreading the word.
I think, yeah, it's all about working with people to create solutions and being a bit more flexible. I think because there is this feeling at the moment, certainly I've felt it, working in music and not being aware of many other people with additional access requirements doing that, you kind of feel like you're the only person to have done it. So I think when you're working with people, it's great when they are a little bit flexible and they can allow you to kind of understand yourself a little bit better and how you can interact with the music industry. And then I think using a platform like Sound Without Sight to share that with the rest of the world, so that, you know, someone puts into Google, how can I access this specific thing in music? There's a breadcrumb trail there to pick up, and you're no longer working in complete isolation. There's something there to follow.
Excellent. Well, how can we keep in touch? What's the best way to keep across developments in this area?
I think the best way is soundwithoutsight.org, which at the moment is the placeholder website where you can read about the project and kind of say hello in the meantime. It will be launching in the first week of May, so I imagine very shortly after this episode goes out. Also in that first week of May, on the 4th, is the event at Google. So I would encourage anyone to sign up to that, to engage with the stream and, you know, let us know what you're thinking. And you can get that by going to inclusivemusicroundtable.eventbrite.co.uk. So any questions about any of that, please feel free to email contact@soundwithoutsight.org.
Any final thoughts from you, Pete?
I think spread the word and believe it's possible.
Jay Pocknell from RNIB's Music Advisory Service and Peter Bosher, audio producer. Thank you very much. Looking forward to the Sound Without Sight event for audio creators in early May. So we'll bring you updates about that as we get them. Callum Stoneman, are you a creative person? We were talking about recording earlier on, and you said that you weren't somebody who records. Have you used technology to be creative? Have you produced any audio? Do you play any kind of musical instrument? Anything like that?
Yeah, I'm not the most creative person, to be honest. I mean, I did music GCSE at school a few years ago, and that was, you know, I guess you could say I created something there. It wasn't very good. I don't think it's ever going to see the light of day, thankfully.
But, Christmas number one.
No, I doubt it. But that was using GarageBand, and that's the kind of audio software that comes pre-installed on the Mac. And I mean, a few years ago, it wasn't that accessible. It was usable-ish if you worked out all the kind of tricks and tweaks that you could make to it. It's got a lot better nowadays. And in fact, I still use that now for recording this, you know, when I record demos and stuff for Tech Talk. Obviously, we've got Howell Davies, who you heard from earlier. He works with us behind the scenes. But sometimes when I record demos, not that I'm trying to take his job, but I do some of the edits myself, because there's always something that goes a bit wrong. You know, there'll be something that doesn't go to plan, or I'll have forgotten to set Do Not Disturb, so then you get notifications coming through, and, you know, I'll take those bits out. And I use GarageBand for that still. But I'm starting to learn Reaper as well, because that's a bit more of a lightweight audio editor. GarageBand is more for proper music producing, and it's a bit over the top, really, for the sort of edits that I'm doing, you know, just cutting things out or just turning things up or turning things down, you know, post-production.
I'm going to challenge you on Reaper being lightweight. I mean, Reaper is my sort of poison of choice. So Reaper, for those that don't know, it's a digital audio workstation software, or a DAW, and Reaper is available on Windows or on macOS. You can add plugins to make it accessible with your screen reader. So if you use Reaper on Windows, you go and download a third party set of scripts that gives you some keystrokes and some voice feedback through your screen reader, and you can do an awful lot with it, Callum. It is a bit of a mire once you get into it. So you can do simple audio editing. It'll also do multi-track, which is great. It does non-destructive editing, so it saves everything to a project file, so it doesn't damage the original audio content. There is obviously the ability to work with music in there as well, so you can bring in, you know, MIDI files, and if you're a musician, you're able to do that. I always wanted to get into MIDI. Never really quite managed it. I mean, I do play piano a little bit, and I enjoy that. I managed to find myself a Yamaha digital piano, a P125, which is very accessible. It's got tactile buttons. There's no screen. And that does the job. I got that during the lockdown when my wife got sick of me playing the acoustic piano in our living room.
Were you forced to get it?
Yeah, but Reaper is tremendously powerful. There is a sort of a freemium, you know, version available, but then if you're using it in a kind of a professional context, then it's $60, I think, which is really affordable compared with comparable software. So that does seem to be the package that a lot of blind and partially sighted people are using, but there are others out there. Certainly Audacity is very popular just for audio editing. I used to do quite a bit of SoundForge back in the day, and Cakewalk and Sonar, and tinker around with things like that. But if you are an audio creator, what do you use? What do you like? What works? What doesn't work? Maybe you produce music. Maybe you mix audio. So it'd be good to know what tools people like or think could be made better. So let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
More than 30 exhibitors are filling the All Nations Centre in Cardiff for this year's Sight Village Wales, where I caught up with Alex from Seeing Solutions, who provide technology to help people to read, write, and carry out everyday tasks. And for the first time in their 20-year history, they've opened a brick-and-mortar shop.
We've just opened up what we think is the first low-vision shop in Nottingham, and we're really excited. We've got a lot of really positive feedback. And for years we've been thinking, why are there hearing aid shops and mobility shops but no low vision shops? And so we thought it's the right time.
You're exhibiting some really interesting looking pieces here today. What's on offer?
So we've got a range of equipment to help with more complicated tasks or some things that are more simple. Everything from the Mercury 12, which is based on a Microsoft Surface Pro. It's a full PC that someone can carry around with them, but also incorporates a stand so it works as a magnifier and a reading machine as well. So for students or people in education, that's everything they need to carry out everything they do day to day, basically, and it folds away into a backpack to carry around. We've also got basic reading machines where you press play and it will read out your letter or a page of a book for someone who wants something a little bit more straightforward but still needs access to the printed material.
What have people been interested so far in? What have people been surprised by the things you've been able to bring?
Yeah, a lot of interest so far in something we've been providing for a while, but a device called the Mini Guide. It's an ultrasonic obstacle locator, and it's we've got a lot of users around the country, designed by an engineer in Australia who saw a need for something like this. It uses sonar to detect objects in a blind person's path. And give a vibration feedback that there's something in the way so they can safely navigate around that. It's to be used in conjunction with a white cane or a guide dog, not as a primary aid, but in somewhere like a cafe where you might need to navigate around chairs and tables, it's very helpful. You can have vibration feedback, you can plug headphones into the back of it as well, you can use a mount to put it onto a cane or a wheelchair or a walking frame. Some people even put it onto push chairs. As well, so that they get a little bit more feedback of what's in front of them, and it will detect overhanging objects as well as posts and things at foot level too.
Where can people find out more information about the items you brought with you today and also about Seeing Solutions and your new shop as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to go to our website, which is seeing.solutions, nothing else, nice and simple. If you put it into the search bar, seeing.solutions, you'll bring us up. Or you can give us a call on 0115 981 6636 or send us an email from the website. We're always happy to help.
Alex, from Seeing Solutions, thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you.
One product getting a lot of attention was the WeWalk Smart Cane. Sid told us more about how WeWalk works.
Now, with the advent of artificial intelligence, we're talking about technology, you know, overlapping everything. We've come up with a smart cane. So basically, it's the same ambidextrous cane with a handle, which we have built. The handle has an ultrasonic sensor, which basically detects obstacles as you walk, ranging from 80 centimeters to 160 centimeters, depending on the settings that you place it in. And the idea is to connect that cane with our custom-made WeWalk application, giving you seamless navigation, transportation, and exploration. The idea is for you or for a visually impaired person to keep the phone in their pocket and operate the application via the touchpad, which is on the cane, just on top of the ultrasonic sensor.
And for people who may not have been hands-on with a WeWalk before, how does it differ from a long cane? Is it much different in terms of weight and handling?
In terms of weight, it is about 80 to 100 grams more than the normal long cane. In terms of functionality, it does exactly the same thing as a long cane does. So if you know how to operate a long cane, you'll be fine operating the WeWalk. In terms of technology, it's like if you have, an old Nokia phone and then you suddenly jump onto an Android phone, it does take you about a week or so to get hands-on with it. It's very, very similar. If you fiddle with the app, fiddle with the cane for a week, maybe 10 days, you are absolutely fine. And not just that, but we also provide you a demonstration. There is a 30-minute complimentary demonstration that we provide with every cane purchase to every customer. So it is something which is very sort of intuitive as you start using it. You can visit the two options. You can visit our website, WeWalk, WeWalk.io, or you can also visit our NIB website. RNIB are of its distributors and our research and development partners also. They also sell canes on our behalf at reasonably good prices. So you can connect either of these two agencies and we can do the best for you.
What sort of problems do you think the WeWalk is here to solve?
We want to ensure that every visually impaired person feels empowered. He feels empowered. He's depending as least as possible on other people and on other resources. So if you have a cane which shows you directions, which shows you your nearest Starbucks or McDonald's, you can reach there without the help of anyone. And the idea is, you know, not to depend on people and other resources. It's basic empowerment. That's it.
Associated Optical supply opticians, charities and hospitals with practical solutions for blind and partially sighted people. Business Development Manager Ian told me a little bit about their product line.
Because we're in Wales, we have the Welsh Low Vision Scheme, of which we supply the Eschenbach optical products to. So today we want to really showcase some of the other products that you can't get on the Welsh Low Vision Scheme. So one of those is the Elementis, which is a brand new lamp that we have. So normally you've got a low vision lamp or you have a lamp that you use in the house. This combines the two. But what we also do is combine it with three different light temperatures. Because one of the biggest things that we find is in the industry is that it's almost like a one-size-fits-all. Whereas you kind of go like middle of the road for somebody with regards to their light temperature and what they need. Whereas with this lamp, we have three different light temperatures so we can customise it to whatever's best for that individual.
What items have people been sort of most excited about getting hands-on and getting to try?
So everybody that seems to have come over to the stand so far today, it's the cocoons, so it's the fitovers. Because the range of fitovers that we have here don't look like your traditional fitover that look like safety glasses that advertise your sight impairment. The design of the cocoons just make them look like you actually want to wear them. It looks like a mainstream product, which is something that we're really passionate about, that products don't look like Fisher-Price toys, that you could use a digital magnifier on a train or on in a restaurant, and it doesn't look like, again, that you're advertising your visual impairment. So, yeah, the cocoons are the kind of go-to at the moment.
And what's the advantage for you to come to an event like Sight Village over just doing things online and speaking to people over the phone?
We aren't the greatest fans of doing things online. We see the need for it, obviously, but it's the fact that you can get to try it. A lot of the customers that have come over today, they've been looking at the different lens colours, and they might have been using a grey lens in the past, but actually because of their eye condition, because of what they're struggling with, it might be that a different lens colour, because of its properties, is better suited to them. And here they can try it, they can take it outside, we can have a chat about it. Whereas I think when you do things online and on the phone, because we're working in an optical industry, you kind of need to see it and you need to play with it and you need to see what's best for you, because like I said earlier, everybody's individual. So we have to make sure what we're choosing is best for you and best for your vision.
And where can we find out more information about Associated Optical and the products you've got on offer?
So we've got two websites. We've got the associatedoptical.com website, and we also, which has got all the Eschenbach products on there, the optical and the digital magnifiers and lighting. And then we've also got the cocoons.uk website, which has got all of the filters, low vision and retail, and the nighttime driving lenses.
Enjoy your time at Sight Village Wales today, and thanks very much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Thank you so much for your company this week here on Tech Talk. Don't forget, of course, you can hear the programme first of all. We debut, we premiere, we go live, or it's the first time you can hear us at least, every Tuesday at 1 p.m. UK on RNIB Connect Radio. And then you can find us as a podcast each Friday. Callum Stoneman, thank you very much.
Thank you. See you next week.
You will do indeed, when we will be hearing all about why the travel company Skyscanner are recruiting for a blind or partially sighted engineer. And we'll also be learning more about some of the new technology products arriving in the RNIB shop. So do tune in for all of that. From myself and Callum, until next time, bye for now.